I'm Rachel Wiseman. I'm with the Texas Department of State Health Services, and I'm going to discuss multiple outbreaks we experienced recently in correctional facilities. Just a little bit of background on mumps. It is part of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. It's a two-dose series that's over 90% effective. The disease itself has a 40% asymptomatic rate. There's no treatment and no post-exposure prophylaxis recommendations, and it has an incubation period of 12 to 25 days, and all of these will come into play at some point in these outbreaks. We have in the past enjoyed a fairly low incidence of mumps in Texas since the second dose requirement was instituted in the early 1990s. We average about 17 or so cases a year. However, that doubled in 2009 to 40 and then tripled in 2010 provisionally to over 120 cases. A bit about corrections in Texas. Over 150,000 people reside in a state prison. Approximately 100,000 are in the county jails at any given time. Many residents or inmates are housed in dorms or pods, very similar to a barracks, big room, lots of bunk beds, not necessarily the sort of cells stacked on top of each other we think of or what we see in the movies. And there can be 40 to 60 people housed in one large area together in these sort of barrack-style settings. And facilities can be very small, from just a couple beds to over 10,000. The first outbreak started in July of 2010. In a six-day period, nine inmates were diagnosed with peritonitis in one facility. All had been in the facility for over 25 days, meaning that their exposure had to have occurred within the facility. All nine reported having received two doses of the MMR. However, they're in correctional facility. They don't have access to any of their records. They're all adults. And so we looked in our local registry that for this county, and we were able to find four of them and validate their vaccination history. However, the other five we couldn't find, either because they weren't originally from that county or they hadn't been vaccinated. We couldn't really tell. We do not have a statewide lifetime registry. Once people turn 18, they age out of the registry. To control the outbreak in the inmate population, all suspects or cases were isolated for 5 days. All exposed dorms were quarantined for the 25 days of an incubation period. So the 40, 50, or 60 men were not allowed to leave that pod or dorm that they were in, which you're thinking, well, they're in jail, they wouldn't leave anyway. But there's a lot of movement within a facility, transfers between housing assignments. Sometimes they have lunch in a different part. Sometimes they have activities, church, GED classes, all sorts of things. It's a sort of very mobile population in a very small space. Inmates that had been exposed or transferred to another correctional facility were quarantined once they arrived to the new facility. Inmates who had been exposed but then were already scheduled for release were released and were followed in the community by the appropriate health department. All inmates that were quarantined were offered the MMR, and daily symptom checks were performed by medical staff and or correctional staff. So the thought on offering the vaccine to the quarantined inmates was not that we would prevent the next round of cases, but because we had essentially locked 50 men in a room together who'd been exposed to the mumps, we wanted to prevent that next wave. So we had the first cases identified. People were probably already infected and incubating. We couldn't modify that, but anyone who hadn't already been infected, we could keep them from becoming infected. So that was our theory, based on theory. There was not a lot of science behind that. To control the outbreak amongst staff, all healthcare staff were offered the vaccine. All correctional staff were educated on mumps, signs, symptoms, transmission. Staff who are assigned to work in or around quarantined areas were offered the vaccine. And staff cases, or any staff who exhibited signs and symptoms, were kept out of work for 5 days. Outbreak one did spread a little bit. Exposed inmates had already been transferred out of the facility by the time those initial cases had been diagnosed. So we had to scramble and tracked them down all over the state because they went to multiple facilities. So it was a statewide multi-agency contact investigation, and we developed a lot of partnerships over the course of this outbreak. And of all the inmates that were tracked around the state, we did find that we pulled three out of general population for examination, and at examination, three were found to have symptoms of mumps at that time. And then there a fourth case was found at that facility who we believed have had contact with those first three. Of those four, three presented with orchitis only. They didn't have any swelling here. So the control measures that were implemented in the first facility were implemented in Facility B. Overall, we had 30 cases in this outbreak. It lasted from July to October. It included four officers at Facility A, a total of 22 inmates at Facility A, and the four inmates at Facility B. However, no community cases related to this outbreak were identified. And we did request that all of our health departments in Texas, anytime a mumps suspect was identified, to extensively ask them questions for exposure to the correctional system, either with relatives, friends that had been incarcerated or that worked in a correctional facility. Before the first outbreak ended, we got a call from another facility in a completely distinct part of the state, and in 4 days they had also had nine inmates present with peritonitis. These inmates were much less clear on their vaccination status, and we did a lot of initial testing with this group. We tested seven serologically for IgM, and only one of those was positive. We did viral samples on all nine of them, and seven of those had mumps virus isolated. So there's some overlap. There were six that had culture and serology performed, and four of those had the virus isolated but were IgM negative. So this was a message that actually I heard at last year's NIC, that the CDC and the labs had put out information that vaccinated people could have negative IgM results for mumps. And so we were expecting that a little bit, but not quite at this scale. And it's very hard to explain to your general practitioner, oh, it's IgM negative, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have the mumps. We have to wait for the viral culture. We have to isolate or quarantine his contacts. So it's a very difficult message, although I think I have it down. To control this outbreak, we used a different tact because it was a very different type of facility. It was very small. All of the inmates, or most of them at least, had jobs in the community, working at businesses, not just like picking up trash on the side of the road. And all of the exposed inmates were allowed to continue working, which is what we would do with the mumps exposure in the community. We wouldn't quarantine people that weren't already in some sort of institutionalized setting. Worksite notifications were not done. However, all ill inmates were isolated for 5 days. All staff and inmates were offered vaccine, and there were no secondary cases in the facility or in the community. So we all had a nice Thanksgiving, and then December rolled around, and we had a third outbreak. This time, six inmates identified in 2 days. And Facility A and Facility D are in the same county. So now there is some question of, well, did that outbreak not end? And it just, it's a 40% asymptomatic rate. Did it spread into the community and then it spread back into a different correctional facility? All of these cases had been at the facility over 25 days, so they've been infected there. However, there is a lot of movement between A and D. So it's possible that someone who'd been infected a second or third generation in the first outbreak had then gone to Facility D and infected these people. About the same time, we got a call from a Facility E in another very distinct part of Texas that they had an inmate with the mumps. There was no relation between that facility and any of these other ones, and there were no secondary cases. So now we're asking ourselves, well, is the entire correctional system of Texas, which is very large, is that now infected? I mean, because that was our goal with outbreak A, was to not infect the entire correctional system of Texas. And it's a question we still to this day haven't been able to answer. And then at the same time, Facility A identified a new case. So has it been reintroduced there from Facility D or from the community, or has it just been ongoing transmission that we haven't been able to identify? Outbreak 3 then spread to Facility F, and I apologize for all these letters, but the correctional system does not like any attention, so we have to be as private as possible. There are, again, a lot of transfers between facilities D and F, and facility F is actually not that far from another previous facility, facility C. The control measures that we implemented in the previous outbreaks were implemented again at D and F. And as of March 24th, there had been 19 cases in facility D, one officer and 18 inmates. F had 11 inmates and one officer, and there had been three new cases at facility A. The last onset was March 5th, so I am counting down the hours until 25 days will be up, and then we will have survived one incubation period without a case. We will probably wait until there's been two incubation periods to declare it over, but we'll have to see. So just a brief summary of the outbreaks, a lot of information there. 73 outbreak-related cases occurred in correctional facilities. Genotype G was identified in at least one case at each of the facilities. That is common to other outbreaks in the United States, the most recent New York one, the Iowa one, and it's been found in other outbreaks around the world. And it's previously been found in Texas community cases. The Texas Department of State Health Services distributed over 2,000 doses of MMR vaccine to various parts of the correctional system, and no community spread was identified. So these outbreaks taught us a lot and identified a lot of issues within our own system and with mumps diagnostics in general, the first of which is how useful is serology. The negative predictive value at two of the facilities was only 43%. And when you're talking about locking down parts of a facility or vaccinating mass amounts of people, you want to be able to say, that's not a case. We don't have to do that. And we weren't able to do that when we would get negative results. There's a lengthy turnaround time for viral culture. The CDC actually did help us with PCR testing. However, that was hampered a lot in January by crappy weather in Atlanta and actually in Texas. And we are going to add PCR capability to our own laboratory once flu season ends. And it is very difficult for facilities and health departments to follow specimen collection and transport instructions. That one I've not been able to fix yet, and it's actually true for most of our diseases that we follow, but we need better instructions for how to collect a specimen and get it sent to our lab in a satisfactory condition. There are a lot of unique problems in dealing with the correctional population. We speak different languages. Isolate means something different to them than it does to us. They don't like the term quarantine, so we had to use their they already had the term medically restricted, so we had to use that a lot, and just things like that. And they would describe what their facilities looked like, and we're just like, what are you talking about? So there were a lot of site visits done, very intense conference call schedule. I'm pretty sure I'm on speed dial for the public health office for some of those correctional facilities. And it became clear that it was not clear who was responsible for public health in correctional facilities. You know, you're talking about state facilities, county facilities, there are federal facilities, and then we have county and state health departments. So, you know, who's responsible for what? And a lot of our health departments are kind of like, they've got medical people, they can do it. Well, they're not the ones tasked with public health. So we did write responsibilities for disease investigation and corrections. There are also a lot of vaccine-related issues. There's no statewide lifetime registry, as I mentioned before. However, that changed unrelated to this as of February 2011. So 20 years from now, when we have this outbreak again, we'll be able to find all of their vaccination records. There were very high vaccine refusal rates. Scare tactics help a little. To be very blunt, men are very protective of their testicles. And if you reinforce the orchitis message, they're like, okay, so... it was maybe a little crummy of the primarily female public health force, but there you have it. And shipping vaccine and maintaining the cold chain was often difficult. Correctional facilities weren't used to receiving vaccine, and so we learned, it only took once for us to realize we needed to send it to our health departments or the closest public health partners we had and then drive it over. And there are, of course, epidemiologic issues. The clinical case definition that we use in Texas is not broad enough. It really only included peritonitis presentations. So we have since changed that for 2011 to include non-peritonitis presentations. And I believe the CSE definition has also sort of gone the same direction. And how broad do you define an EpiLink? If you have a facility of 5,000 people living together, but they're kind of segregated but kind of not, are all 5,000 people exposed? If someone's sick here and then someone's sick here, and you know, at what point are they considered contacts for each other, and at what point do you start considering other facilities as contacts? So we had to make some determinations for that. And how do you track spread with a 40% asymptomatic rate? This will probably haunt me for years, I mean, or at least several months, till we know that it's transmission is done in the correctional facilities. The good news from this seems to be, though, that mumps transmission is difficult in highly vaccinated, non-incarcerated population. We saw no spread from correctional officers to their families. We saw no spread from released inmates to the community. And those 9 inmates that all worked in the community, we didn't see any spread there either. And I think this was shown in, you know, that Iowa outbreak, the New York outbreak, that really takes a lot of people in a really close setting to really transmit the mumps effectively in a vaccinated population. And I do like to point out that apparently prison is a lot like college dorms. But so that's it. Thank you.